This is Jewish Board Talk with Cherise Zifford, only on 101.9 High FM.
What are the implications of South Africa's ambassador to the U.S. being expelled? What does Trump's dressing down of Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky mean for democracy? And are we entering into a new world order? There is no better person to answer these questions than my former colleague, Stephen Groost, head of African Governance and Diplomacy Program at the South African Institute for International Affairs in Johannesburg. He was also the senior researcher at the Jewish Board from 2011 to 2013, which makes him a former colleague. And I'm absolutely happy to be speaking to you once again, Stephen. How are you?
Hi, Cherise. I'm very well. Hope you're well too.
Good, thank you. Stephen, it feels like we are or have entered into a new world order. Would you agree?
We are definitely at what the Germans call a Zeitenwende, a changing of the times. This was a phrase used by former German Chancellor Olaf Scholz when Ukraine was invaded by Russia in 2022. And I think we are in certainly very changing times. We have a president in the White House in Donald Trump who is throwing conventions and niceties and systems and long pedigreed policies and programs out the window. And I'm not sure the world yet understands how to react to this. It's a very tumultuous time. We have the war in Ukraine still going on, but hopefully coming to an end. This morning we just heard a resumption of hostilities in Gaza. And yes, it's definitely times that are changing.
So are they changing? I mean, we obviously don't know where it's changing. And some people think, you know, Trump throwing out convention is a good thing. Others think it's a bad thing. How calculated is what he is doing? How calculated do you think it is?
I think it's very calculated. Many dismiss him as a buffoon or a fool or irrational, but I think there's method in his madness. He's clearly wanting to make the US more self-sufficient when it comes to critical minerals like cobalt and tantalum and things like that. So he's trying to get them from wherever he can, whether that's Ukraine or Africa or Greenland. While it appears chaotic, I think there is a plan. There is a systematic process that is going on with Trump withdrawing from the World Health Organization, the Paris Climate Accords, and so forth, making his enemies nervous and his friends nervous as well, coming down hard on the Europeans in terms of tariffs on his his neighbors Mexico and Canada, and of course has South Africa firmly in his sights.
So before we get to South Africa, because there's a lot to discuss over there, in terms of democracy and the kind of the democratic world and America being seen as the head of the democratic world, is this something for us to worry about?
Well, I do think America's credibility as a moral power has taken a knock, but not just in the Trump administration. I would say probably from the war on terror, at least in 2001, remember George W. Bush. So we're talking about 25 years. Countries in the global south very easily point to hypocritical stances by the Americans. And what we're seeing is Trump using all the powers at his disposal. Is that eroding democracy? Well, the courts, some of the courts think so in the US. Many observers do. But we only need to go back to the 1930s to see someone who used legal means to achieve power and then slowly eroded that power. And I'm referring to Adolf Hitler. Now, I'm not comparing Trump. I don't think they are. It's a fair comparison. But through legal means and, you know, invoking 200-year-old statutes, a lot can be accomplished. And we've seen this in Trump's flurry of executive orders and proclamations and so forth in the last, 2 months that he's been in power.
You speak about it being very calculated, and obviously, I mean, Trump was very clear that he was going to put America first and make MAGA. But do you think he's governed by a set of advisors, or do you think it's a very personal decisions that he is making?
I think he is consulting advisors extensively. And I probably think because they're such loyalists that they make him think that everything that he thinks of is his great own idea. So there's no question that organizations such as the Heritage Foundation have an influence. Of course, the outsized influence of Elon Musk. There's a number of his cronies and his business partners and businessmen that he's put in key positions, not least Steve Witkoff as his special envoy on conflict resolution. So there definitely is a group of people around Trump. A difference so far from the first administration is that these are really seeing the world through his eyes and very unlikely to stand up to him like John Bolton did, or a Mike Pompeo, or a string Rex Tillerson, a string of others. It's early days, but if you see the TV appearances, nobody, none of his secretaries of state fail to say how wonderful he is and to praise him and almost give deference to the king before they say anything else.
Can we talk a little bit about the interview, the interview that he had with Zelensky, Vladimir Zelensky, in the White House? And can you explain a little bit about what that is about? I know you are specifically an expert on Russia, Africa, and you understand the region probably better than most. What was that about?
Well, Zelensky was ostensibly coming to the White House to sign a deal over critical minerals with Trump and to advance the peace process, which Trump has been pushing very heavily since he's come back into office. What transpired was, I think, that he had been difficult in those negotiations behind closed doors. He had not wanted to give away as much to Russia as perhaps Trump and company were prepared to do at that point. And to me, it looked like a deliberately planned ambush by Trump and by Vance, the vice president. Trump got really angry. Zelensky got angry. Trump said, "You're playing with World War III." I think it was, frankly, part of a negotiating tactic to play hardball, to tell Zelensky that he didn't hold any of the cards, that Trump held the cards, and that if he didn't make a deal, his whole country would be lost. We'll see what the deal looks like, but it's been very clear that after that, Zelensky climbed down. He did an apology without apologizing. Anybody who's a parent has heard some of those. And has signed on to the peace plan, whatever it may look like, and put the ball back in Vladimir Putin's court. So
Well,
I think it was political theater. I think it was a reality TV show, which Trump is an expert of knowing how to play.
in terms of some people afterwards said that was kind of the end of democracy, it was throwing democracy under the bus, that Trump's relationship with Putin is perhaps stronger or closer. There were all kinds of speculations, and what are the implications of it for Russia and democracy?
Yeah, I think some of those comments were hyperbolic and hysterical. You've got to remember that the political left in the US seems decimated at the moment. There's no comeback from the Democrats at the moment. There's no clear leader. There was controversy over passing Trump's spending bill and keeping the government open. So I think, and many in the media tend to be center left. And so I think they're appalled and horrified by Trump. But he's just pushing on regardless. In terms of Russia, yes, Trump has had a long relationship with Russia. There's some that say that The Russians possibly have some what they call kompromat, compromising material from a previous trip of his in the 80s or the 90s. But I think he admires strong leaders. He admires Putin. He admires Xi Jinping in China. He admires Kim in North Korea. But he has said that he will put pressure on Russia and that there may be more sanctions coming. This is a very difficult negotiation between the Russians and the Ukrainians to get peace that's going to satisfy most people, if not everybody. Putin seems to be holding the cards. He said Ukraine can't join NATO, and he's keeping what he's taken, and so forth. And so, what was the war for from the Ukrainian side?
I mean, how do you see this? Do you think this that somehow Trump will be able to bring about peace, although both, well, Ukraine might be very unhappy about it?
Well, I do think Trump would like nothing better than a Nobel Peace Prize. And I'll give him credit. He certainly has put effort into both this and resolving what's happening in the Middle East. I think he's been determined. Whether it's a peace that will satisfy Zelensky is very doubtful, because I think there's going to be territorial compromise. And I think Russia is going to hang on to what it's taken, including Crimea and the four regions in southeast Ukraine. And there's probably, I don't think joining NATO is a realistic outcome for Zelensky. And I don't think he's going to get the security guarantees in black and white as he wants them. So it is very possible that this could be a short-lived peace with Russia invading again when it suits it.
Wow, that's hectic. Let's quickly turn our attention to the Middle East. Is Trump faring better in the Middle East?
Well, I'm not so sure. We did see the second batch of hostages released when he came into power, and that, despite some serious ups and downs, happened. And everybody who was promised to be released, living and deceased, was eventually re released. Then we've been in this difficult period where it's been neither truce nor war. Witkoff said that Hamas was the one that was holding out on the next phase of the negotiations, and in the past few days, Israel has resumed attacking Gaza, and it's had sporadic attacks in Syria and Lebanon, over this period. So it seems to be going downhill again, and the fighting is set to increase, and I think it won't take long before the rockets will start flying into Israel. So nobody underestimates how difficult this is. People fear for the hostages that they may have had their chance. There's still, I think, 60 something of them left in Gaza, of whom no more than half are considered to be alive. It's a very difficult situation.
It's so awful when we think about it. America, do you think that with America attacking the Houthis and things flaring up, that we might see another war, but again, this time between Israel and America against the Middle East countries, many of whom are crumbling?
I think Trump's reluctant to put boots on the ground. He doesn't like foreign wars, so I don't see him starting another one. He has made very serious threats to the Houthis, who are defiant and continuing to harass shipping in the Persian Gulf and in the Red Sea. I don't think anybody wants a war, but sometimes all of these careful calculations go wrong. We have to prepare for that eventuality. He also blames the Houthis on Iran as well. So the temperature between the US and Iran has been increasing as well.
So you're not convinced that that would lead to necessarily a war?
It depends how restrained the various partners are in their actions and reactions. I
Sometimes.
don't think Iran, I don't think Iran wants a war.
We are leaving the best for last, and that is the relationship between South Africa and America in light of expulsion of our ambassador Rasool. What is your take?
I think it's pretty serious. It's been downplayed by both Rasool and President Ramaphosa, but it is a symbol of a deteriorating relationship, not just in the last 6 weeks, but I think it's become a lot worse in the last 6 weeks, but probably over the last 2 decades, as the ANC has used every provocation to antagonize the US that it can think of, including the campaign to rename Sandton Drive after Leila Khaled, a Palestinian hijacker, not only to irritate the Jewish community, but because the US consulate is on that road. That's just one of many examples, including the Lady R incident, including the joint military exercises with Russia and China over the first anniversary of the invasion of Ukraine. It's going to take a lot of skill and a lot of finesse to try and salvage something from this. But at the moment, things are very, very difficult between South Africa and the US. And it's interesting because the US is meant to take over the chairpersonship of BRICS at the end of the year, and we're supposed to be working closely in hand with them. Maybe that's a bridge that can start repairing the relations. But my column, my article in the Jewish Report this week delves into this question.
So we're not going to refer our listeners. We are going to refer our listeners to the Jewish Report article. Stephen, do you feel like both parties, both America and South Africa, deep down really do want this relationship?
But they have to. They have to. I mean, we're living in a world where we are interdependent. The South Africa, if the relationship were to totally dissolve, I think it would be bad news for both countries. South Africa is an important economy on the continent. It's a leader. The US is the strongest power in the world. We can't afford to have bad relations. So something's got to be done. Whether yet another delegation to Washington being sent by President Ramaphosa is to explain ourselves is going to work. I don't think the other delegations worked very well. So it's hard to see a way out of it, but everybody will try, I think, certainly on the South African side.
We don't really have time, so I'm going to ask you to just keep it brief. But if South Africa and America break relations, does that open a way for China-South African relations, and what does it mean for our country?
Well, those relations are already extensive. I think indeed the more that America pushes South Africa, the closer to the embrace of Russia and China it will become. China is our biggest single trading partner, built up over the last 25 years, and China is flexing its diplomatic muscles on the international stage. So where vacuums are left, it's going to try and fill them.
Really interesting times. Stephen, my time with you always flies so quickly. And there's always so much to still talk about. But I'm hoping you'll come back again and we can revisit these issues every now and then, because I think the world is on edge. I mean, I know I'm nervous when I go to bed at night to see what I'm going to wake up to the following morning.
Well, you, Cherise, anytime.
Spoken like a true former colleague. Thank you so much for joining me. That is Stephen Grew's former colleague, as you can tell. He's the head of the African Governance and Diplomacy Program at the South African Institute of International Affairs.